nothing to nobody. It's a word that's all over there. I mean, I think if I had my druthers, I might ban it altogether because it's such a catch-all. And yeah, I have one friend in the room anyway. Because what does it mean? If you ask people to, you know, some people it's recycling, other people it's a bike lane, other people it means no pesticides. Other people it means getting people the food they need to be so that human life itself can be sustainable. And so I think one of the really interesting questions is how do we define this? Who dictates to whom about it? And how is it changing in its scope and definition? But there are a couple of things that are worth observing as we go into this next conversation that I would simply lay out by way of parameters. We know that warmer temperatures and changing rain patterns are altering the volatility of weather patterns and farming conditions and agricultural productivity in certain areas. We heard that before, we'll hear it some more. Higher temperatures, above average rainfall in some places, or below average rainfall is a big worry for food producers here in Texas, in Australia, in Africa, around the world, but also a concern for consumers because this volatility can bring with it higher prices. Food price crises point to what could be around the corner, could be part of this future we talked about a little while ago. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization has calculated that over the last 3 years, something like 40 million people have been pushed into hunger due to food inflation. We know that food insecurity, I prefer the term food insecurity when talking about this in the context of the United States rather than hunger, is a problem that is growing largely because of the economic conditions. So this notion of sustainability, however we define it, is front and center. Just last week at the Green Biz Forum in New York, a bunch of pretty powerful people, some of them executives at big companies like Walmart and McDonald's and others, lamented the limits on their influence, which is considerable, to affect and to shape what their companies can do alone and the impact they can have on the supply chain. And as I say, that's not trivial given the size of those companies and the people who were speaking. As one of our colleagues in journalism, Mark Gunther at Fortune, recently said, sustainability has to be a team sport, however you define sustainability. Those are my words. So now we're going to hear from a couple of people, leaders in sustainability circles, Walmart, about how they're embracing the idea about partnership up and down the line, up and down the supply chain, as the way to generate measurable impact. We'll talk about that. And from one of their partners and a relatively new partner in the effort, the National Corn Growers. So, please welcome Rob Kaplan. He's a senior manager of sustainability for Walmart stores, drives product and supply chain innovation by integrating carbon reduction and business strategy, including plans to eliminate 20 million metric tons of greenhouse gas from the supply chain. So, Rob, please join us. Also, Rick Tolman, he's CEO of the National Corn Growers Association, as you know, a farmer-led organization which protects and advances the interests of the nation's corn growers, previously served as executive director of the U.S. Grains Council. I'm going to walk over here. Now, I have a really unfair advantage in this conversation because Rob here is a graduate of our school in media and public affairs. And as I told him, if he doesn't do all the right things, I will go back and find his transcripts. Although, with his job at Walmart, he has considerably more influence on me than I will ever have on him. So we'll leave it there.
My mother still has more influence over me than my job, yeah.
Well, that's encouraging. Your mother will... Can I tell you something? Your mother will always have more influence over you. Right? So, gentlemen, thank you very much. I want to ask you both to start with this notion of sustainability. I have my friend in the back. What's your name? In the back who applauded sustainability, my comment on sustainability? Who was it?
No friends now.
Yeah. Huh?
What was question?
What's your name?
I just asked what your name was.
Greg.
Greg. Okay, so Greg applauded when I said we shouldn't even talk about sustainability. Right. And using the word. And I recently did a panel with three mayors. And they were all wanting to be to brag about sustainability and how they were creating more sustainable cities. And they all said, though, they don't use the word sustainability because if they talk about sustainability, people's eyes roll back in their heads because they actually don't know what they're talking about. So in the case of cities, they say, how can I help you save money on your energy bill? How can I plant trees so that your street is cooler? So would you guys start by defining what you mean by sustainability?
Yeah, it is a challenging term and one that I often wish is not on my job description or my business card.
It's in your title.
It's in my title. And when we walk in the room, people start to roll their eyes back in their head or even worse, shut down because of what they think
Seriously?
We're about to talk about.
They shut down? Because?
Sustainability is such a loaded term.
Meaning what? In what way?
Well, I think Rick will talk a little bit about, you know, how he sees it as an exclusionary concept. But for us at Walmart, our business model is to save people money so they can live better.
Okay, so what do you mean by sustainability?
Sustainability is a key business driver of that concept. Saving money so that people can live better. So when we look after sustainability, and we've done this across our business, in our operations and in our supply chain, we have found that it helps us find opportunities for efficiency, it better manages our risk, and creates better partnerships and relationships with key
So you're not wandering around wondering about your carbon footprint?
So the carbon footprint is a good metric to have. It helps us find that opportunity, but it has to be integrated with a business value.
And sustainability in agriculture, what do you mean?
Sustainability in agriculture is the same idea, but applied with a different lens around how do we find those opportunities for efficiency that improve productivity and better manage risk.
Okay, so what do the corn growers mean when they talk sustainability?
You know, Frank, we Walmart and the National Corn Growers belong to a group called Field to Market, and there's a definition that Field to Market has put that we really like. It's basically, I'll paraphrase, meeting today's needs while preserving the ability of future generations to meet their own needs.
All right, so that's your definition. That's how you're meeting today's needs so that future generations can better meet their needs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think of it as like a bank account. You know, you put your principal in the bank and you live off the interest. You're not digging into your principal. So when we're thinking about soil, we're thinking about water, we're thinking about the resources the farmers have, we're preserving those or making those better and able to live off the increase that we have.
And are you wandering around thinking about carbon footprints?
We're forced to by what society asks us to do. We're involved in an LCA analysis right now.
Yeah.
You know, people, more important to me is what people use sustainability not to mean, and that's what Rob alluded to. It, in general society, it tends to be an exclusionary term. It really ruffles me when I hear people say corn production is not sustainable, conventional agriculture is not sustainable. They used to say what is not what is. And there's many ways to reach those goals that we're talking about, But precluding a certain process or a certain way is not an answer.
And there's a key part in there, too, that sustainability is really a journey, not a destination.
That sounds like a bumper sticker to me.
It's true, though. I mean, you will never have a absolutely 100%, quote, sustainable product. It's almost, tilting at windmills. The opportunity here is to talk about where we are today and where we want to go. Because it's a moving target. You'll have to continuously improve every step of the way.
All right, I'm going to be coming out and opening this up to the floor very soon to bring you into this conversation. So tee up your questions, but let me come back and do a couple things. So in preparation for this and saying, look, we're going to be sitting in a room full of journalists and people who are connecting with through trade publications, with the general public, with farmers and growers and food producers. What's new here? That's what I would want to know if I'm a journalist. What's new? And you said what's new is this relationship that you've got. So would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, from my perspective, we've had discussions about sustainability for 10, 15 years. And
we being?
Society in the U.S., journalists, your profession, environmental groups. And for most of that, when we talk about food production, it's been the food industry at one end and farmers at the other, and a lot of people in between talking, but we have had little opportunity as farm groups to talk to Walmart or to any of the other retailers. So this is new that Rob and I are acquainted. We only met each other 6 months, a year ago, mm-hmm. and are talking about what is it he's hearing from consumers that I can relate to farmers, and what are my farmers able to do and not able to do that I can relate to him. And so that's new. That relationship, we've shortened that chain. Instead of talking at each other, we're talking to each other.
When talking at each other, there has been talking at each other and some tension in the relationship.
Absolutely.
Farmers feeling what?
feeling like they're being prescribed, told what they can do, what they can't do, taking tools away from them, a focus on process instead of outcomes.
Give me an example.
Organic. There's a lot of perception in the general media that sustainable means organic. And if you're not an organic producer, you're not sustainable. And that's absolutely not right. Organic is a way of growing. It's not an end result. And there are other ways to achieve some of the same results. And so let's don't focus on the process. Let's focus on the end result. What is it you want at the end? And then let farmers figure out how they can get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the exciting part in this relationship for me, is that we can align on the outcomes. We know that this is where we want to be. But Walmart, we are not agronomists. We're not farmers. We're not...
But you're huge, and you've got huge influence and power.
I mean, I think that is, I think we had $440 billion in turnover this past year. It is a massive company with massive supply chains. But the reality is that we're not experts on this topic, and we're not experts in many of our supply chains. So where we find the outcomes, we need partners like the National Corn Growers Association to help us figure out, work with their partners, with their growers, to figure out what's the right plan to get from here to there.
You know, just to comment on that, you'd think the farmers I represent grow field corn. There's not a lot of field corn sold in Walmart. But earlier, when I was visiting with Rob, he said, well, corn is king to Walmart in Absolutely. Terms of food. Why is that? Because corn isn't about every food ingredient. So it's not the end product that my farmers produce. It goes through the process and what they're selling to consumers. Yeah.
So what are you trying to accomplish in this dialogue that you've set up? What are these metrics, and will you be able to both agree on what the metrics are meant to be?
So one of the great reasons that I'm excited to work with Rick and American agriculture in general is that a lot of these challenges have been in debate and discussion within the Field to Market Forum. So they've really worked on what are the metrics and have been doing that for 6 or 7 years. Where we're now at is, how do we scale the solutions?
You know, Field to Market, and again, Field to Market's a consortium of food companies like Rob's, clear down to farm groups, cotton, corn, soybeans, wheat, potatoes all belong, soybeans. And in between are John Deere, Monsanto, Bayer, others, and some environmental groups. And what we're trying to figure out is exactly what the question you asked. How do we get on an agreed set of metrics to see where we're at and where we're going? They published a report last summer, the Field to Market, I'm sorry, that covered the period of 1980 to 2011, looking at a series of indicators, environmental indicators, so soil erosion, greenhouse gas emissions, energy use, water use, and I'm missing one off the top of my head, and then some social economic indicators, which includes turnover on assets, labor rates, fatalities, safety. And by and large, Rob, the story was really good about the accomplishments of American ag. Over that period of time, corn production has increased 101%. Yield per acre has increased 64%. And the story was just about the same for all the other commodities. So one of our first jobs, we have a great story to tell. Let's start from that base.
Yeah, and for Walmart, like Rick was talking about, we don't have, you know, commodity grain corn on the shelf, but it is in so much of our products. And when we think about our customers, they care about sustainability, but they don't have the time to make it part of their purchasing decision right now. When you think about the Walmart mom walking the aisles, she's got a 13-month-old baby, and maybe I'm talking about my own wife at the moment, and she's got a limited amount of time. In fact, most consumers spend less than 3 seconds making a decision about what product they're going to put in the store, in their shopping cart.
Less than 3 seconds.
And so what we need to do is give them the confidence that whatever product they pick is going to meet them on those needs around sustainability.
So what is your marketing packaging with respect to sustainability? And you mentioned organics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mean how are we going to...
How are you marketing the food mm-hmm. you sell? How are you marketing the stuff he and they grow?
Yeah, so, Walmart believes in consumer choice. That is really our role in this supply chain. So we don't believe our customers should have to choose between sustainability and affordability, or healthy and affordability, or safe and affordable. Those are challenges for the supply chain to figure out. When we put them on the shelf, if we can deliver it in a way that the customer values, they will reward us all.
Would you talk about some of your metrics? You mentioned metrics a moment ago, mm-hmm. measurables. What are your measurables?
So we have sustainability metrics, but we also have business metrics. And when we think about it in the agriculture space, the idea of better resource management. How can we tell a story about continuous improvement? That's what we're excited to measure. And the great thing about that is that when you're measuring, when you have better resource management, you have better sustainability outcomes, you have better profitability, and you have better yield. And those things are inextricably linked in our minds.
What are your expectations of farmers?
I wouldn't necessarily frame it that way. What I would talk about is that this value chain needs to be safe, affordable, and sustainable for long-term success. And in order to achieve that, the great thing is that American agriculture, and even especially corn, like Rick was talking about, what we've heard in the Field to Market report, is a 50-year heritage of land stewardship and continuous improvement. And that's very exciting. But what got us here may not get us where we need to go. And so we're looking to figure out how the entire chain can partner together to deliver on that promise.
Rick, would you talk about that partnering together to deliver on that promise and what that means for food producers, for farmers?
Let me tell you a cautionary tale, and I'll loop back into that so it'll explain what we're looking for. I interact a lot with a lot of my colleagues overseas who represent corn grower groups, and one is in Italy, Italian corn growers. Product grown in Italy that's very popular is called polenta, and it's a corn meal. It's kind of like our mashed potatoes. It has high phytosanitary requirements. Over the years, the Italian corn growers have had me watch what's happened to them. They've had their tools taken. First of all, they had access to biotechnology, which gave some insect resistance. That was taken away. Then their pesticides were taken away. Today, there is no biotech in their food. There is no very limited pesticides, but they also can't produce their own polenta because of so much insect damage, it can't meet phytosanitary requirements.
Italian farmers cannot produce Italy's polenta?
It's being imported now from Spain. Spain has biotechnology. Spain has access to the tools. So those who wanted those tools taken away in the name of sustainability got that, but they also took away their ability to produce
their
own product.
So are you concerned that sustainability from Walmart could have
What our farmers are concerned about is that this message gets derailed and it becomes taking away things mm-hmm. rather than giving things. Yeah. And that's exactly, and the partnership with Walmart, we want Walmart to help us tell that story. We want the same things Walmart does. People need to have choice and availability, but let's make sure the story gets told correctly.
Are you on the yeah. same page?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that sort of, it goes back to where we started, which is that sort of co-opting the word sustainability, right? So that it means that it is about taking away. And for us, it's not about that. For us, it's about an opportunity for efficiency and for greater value creation, not a restriction.
I want to come to your questions in just a minute, but I'm going to try to capture a conversation that I had during the break that reflects this conversation with a gentleman who is a farmer here, soybeans, I believe, and is concerned that the labeling, for example, that says, you know, free-range eggs or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, in the soybeans that he grows that ends up in the mayonnaise that you sell is going to affect the chickens that he can raise and how he does that. Mm. Legitimate issue?
I'm not too familiar with that issue specifically. In general, we like good labeling because it helps provide more information to the customer. But that trick is, what is a good label? And there's a proliferation.
Well, isn't the issue, though, what the customer wants and how it's marketed and how that essentially trickles down or flows down to the farmer and imposes?
I personally believe that there is a proliferation of labels right now that is not benefiting the customer. And they see on the back of a package half a dozen different labels, and they've actually lost meaning.
Really?
So what we're talking about with Field to Market and with National Corn Growers is, what's a different model here? What's a different way for us to think about communicating sustainability at the point of purchase in a way that resonates with customers?
You got ideas on that one? What would that, you know, what would that look like?
I don't think we've cracked the nut yet. But there's got to be a way to do it that doesn't add inefficiency to the system, but rather builds on the efficiency that we've already had and talks about the overall story.
And probably it's not going to be good enough to simply say, trust me, this stuff is good, right? You're going to need more of a label than that.
Well, that's what we have now. The FDA says biotechnology, for example, is essentially equivalent to non-biotech, so it doesn't need to be labeled. But you do have consumers want to have the right to know, and that's hard to argue against. Labels can be very good or they can be bad. they can be done in such a way that they create hysteria. Just like journalism wants to raise ratings, the marketers want to use labels to push people one way or the other, and that's where we get into problems. It implies something that really isn't true.
I don't know any television that wants to raise ratings. I have no idea what you're talking
about. It must be radio.
Yeah, right. Biggest, newest innovation out there right now?
In corn production, I would say the application of variable rate technology, being able to put down your inputs and your seeds according to the soil type and the conditions that you're facing.
Biggest changing consumer trend right now?
The need for transparency.
In
all products that
In all
bought.
Products.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me open it up to questions for Sir. We got a mic over here. Right behind you. There you go.
If I, Mark Jackson, president of the Iowa Soybean Association, also a director and a vice president on the American Soybean Association. So as we talk, if we can go back a little bit to this labeling scenario, and sustainability seems to be an effort right now where the U.S. soybean, and this is in an aggregate approach, and that's the approach that we're trying to come up with, is how can we tell the world that the U.S. soy is sustainable? Because unfortunately, the science is there, but no one wants to hear the science. The emotion, i.e. the labeling on the mayonnaise jar that says cage-free eggs, and my biggest customer is a chicken and a pig when it comes to feeding my soybeans to an animal. And yet you're telling me that chicken farmer has to put that chicken out of the cage and back on the ground where my grandfather started. So you're backing up. So that becomes an emotional versus a scientific, I guess, is where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. So how do we make that... And obviously, we give the customer what they want. And so how do we have that conversation to go ahead and show that U.S. soy is sustainable and keep the NGOs happy, because they are trying to bring that conversation in from a, as we talked earlier, a European model versus an American model, and both of them work from different ends of that spectrum. Yeah. I'll just leave it at that.
Thanks.
It is a big challenge because, you know, you put that kind of stuff on a shelf, and people do buy it. I think that...
Let's put what stuff on the shelf?
Cage-free labels.
Cage-free eggs. So yeah. If you say that, the consumer responds in a positive
way. Yeah, we sell a lot of cage-free eggs. The opportunity here is there's a lot of great conversation and dialogue happening to try and address this challenge. And Rick, we've been working in field to market to try and do this. There is a little bit, just to push the metaphor further, a little bit of a chicken and egg challenge here, because you have to achieve the results first to be able to tell the story. And there's a huge history of great results, so we want to be able to leverage that, but also be able to look forward, because frankly our customers want to see how we're continuing to improve. Being able to tell a story like that in, you know, a really fast venue or forum is a challenge, but when we have these dialogues happening at field to market where we can get full stakeholder engagement and full stakeholder alignment on what's important and how we can do that, then we can start to unleash the marketers on it and say, here's how you bring that to market on a product.
Rick.
Mark, I think one of the best examples I know of is U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, which American Soybean and USB and NCGA and others are very involved in. This is an effort to bring the farm groups together to pool our resources and get some common messaging that resonates to consumers about their food and share that information. And what we've found through USFRA is a conversation. Consumers want to sit down and converse. They want to talk. They want to understand why you're doing it. And once you can explain why you're doing it and you have the same values, the opposition pretty much melts away. They start to understand, well, it doesn't make sense to do this. I see why you're doing that now. And that's a big job. And I think people like Walmart and the other retailers will be able to help us do that when we get them the data and the information. But we've got that. We've got to have the common messaging and a bigger effort to engage consumers and farmers in a conversation.
Okay. Another question. Right up front. You're back there. Well, I'll save you your exercise. You can come up next.
Rob, appreciated your comment, and Rick as well, about transparency.
Just introduce yourself to the...
Oh, yes, sorry. I'm Michelle Payne, Canoper Cosmetics Corporation. We shook hands earlier.
Yep.
Just curious about your perspective on exactly what transparency looks like in agriculture, and perhaps if you feel so led to talk a little bit about specifically around animal agriculture and meat products, not just corn, because that is certainly important, but perhaps less difficult to be truly transparent. So just curious what your experiences are around that. And Rick, if you have anything to add about your field of market experience, because I think that's a challenge so many of us face.
Yeah. One of our guiding principles in this sort of this quest is to leverage the efficiencies of the system. And when you start talking about transparency, people get very anxious about removing those efficiencies. And, you know, as a company that's based on saving people money, that is certainly not in our best interest, and it's not really in the best interest of the supply chain right now. However, that doesn't mean that we can't tell a really positive story about all of the grain that comes from this region or all of the grain that's on a path towards continuous improvement in America. And wherever you dip your straw in to pull that grain out, you're getting a better grain than you did yesterday. And being able to communicate that at a macro level, but then also being able to start to talk about that similar to the sort of the industry-wide thing that, that Rick is talking about is really how we see that kind of opportunity moving forward. Our customers care about where their food comes from, particularly on the produce side, but also on the grain side. And we want to be able to meet that consumer need.
Unfortunately, field to market doesn't include any livestock groups yet. We've focused on the crop side, but I think the same principles and structure and would work, and I think we at some point we'll want to bring them in. Mm-hmm. One of the really good examples I've seen of dealing with the livestock issues, and again, I'll go back to U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance in Corn Congress on Saturday. I'm going to show a clip from Anderson Cooper on his show, and he had a woman that was concerned about meat and antibiotics and hormones, and so he sent her to a livestock operation, I believe it was in Illinois, and had her meet with the ranchers, farmers, and she walked, it was a farmer-owned feedlot, walked, and the farmer and his wife explained to her what they're doing. There's a segment where she's walking down the feed bunk, she's saying, what's in that feed, what are they feeding them, then they explain the ingredients to her, very transparent. Then she says, do you use antibiotics? And they said, we only use antibiotics under these circumstances and these conditions, and here's what we do, and here's why we use it. Do you use growth hormones? We only use them under these conditions, and just that explanation put her to rest, and when she came back and reported back to Anderson Cooper, he asked her, are you concerned now about antibiotics and hormones in your meat supply, in the meat that you buy? And she said, no. After hearing that explanation, I understand why it's done, I understand the precautions, I understand the safety measures. And again, the need for more conversation is what we have to have.
How is Walmart trying to generate that conversation?
I think that the biggest move we've made in the last year is joining Field to Market. We were the first retailer to come to that forum, and we did it because it's the only place where the entire value chain is represented. And we think that that's the type of solution that needs to, those are the types of players that need to be at the table. Our ambition is to help Field to Market move beyond a pilot situation or just a calculator and into a program for continuous improvement. And that's something that the group is trying to figure out, what does the next 5 years look like? But it needs to happen within that multi-stakeholder arrangement where everybody's on the same page.
It's really interesting because you get to the heart, your question and the response to the heart of a lot of this is communication.
Yes.
It's what you studied when you were at George Washington. And I think of the recent pink slime business. Mm-hmm. And, if we didn't call meat meat and we called it, animal flesh, the labeling and the terminology we use is enormously impactful. So do you want meat with antibiotics in it? Well, no, I don't want to do that, but would you get your kid a shot if your kid has got, So.
And it also depends on the audience is a really key part. How you talk about it with consumers and Walmart moms versus producers and corn farmers is a very different deal.
And how you provide genuine oversight and genuine accountability so that bad things, when they do happen, mm-hmm. stop happening. Next question, in the back, and then I'll come up here.
Oh, this for Rick. And people down in the Ozarks, people are down on what they aren't up on, and a case in point is GMOs, and did not hybrid seed corn become a GMO from the Flint corn days?
Yeah, in my perspective, GMO, genetically modified, I prefer to call it the process of biotechnology, is simply an increase, a more scientific application of crossbreeding. Corn started as a grass. It was teosinte. It was the Aztec and the ancient Indians found a way to crossbreed. They found some that made kernels, and we ended up with cobs, and we've moved along to hybrid corn. Biotechnology is just a more precise way of putting the genes in the right place that you want them to be. So it sounds more dangerous than it is. It's scary when you use those terms, genetically modified, but it is simply crossbreeding. It's the same thing that's been going on with evolution for 3,000 years.
You agree with that?
Do agree. We basically follow the law, you know, and if we do have genetically modified product in our system, probably, but we follow the regulations on how it's required to be communicated. It is true that biotechnology has been around for a long time and will continue to be around for a long time.
I know we have a question up in the front row here.
Hi there. Excuse me. Hi there. Frank Giles, Florida Grower Magazine. We cover the fresh produce side of the business, and there's been a lot of conversation about sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of those growers had an assumption that we do these practices, there'll be a premium price that comes with that. And a lot of cases, that's not the case. So the question is it more of a carrot or a stick? Will the growers get a premium, or the stick being that they can't sell their product if they're not sustainable?
So a lot of the things that we're interested in, as I sort of framed it up earlier, is it's not sustainable if it's going to be costing more. The way things line up with us is when you have something that has an environmental outcome and improves profitability, improves yield, has a business metric associated with it. Where we start to get really excited, where it's a fit with us, is things like resource management, nutrient management, that improve or maintain yield while also reducing the amount of inputs. This goes back to sort of what we've heard all afternoon, which is that resources are shrinking. We have to grow more food and produce more food with fewer inputs. That's a fact of the supply chain for the next 25, 50 years. So that's what sustainability means to us.
You know, I'll give you a graphic example. Well, first of all, our farmers are concerned about the same thing. What starts out as a premium ends up becoming a discount in their experience, and so they're very concerned about it. So I like Rob's explanation that if it costs more, because some of the things that people ask people to do and farmers to do does cost more, but they don't want to pay any more for it. And so that doesn't work economically, obviously. I don't know how I was going to make this point, but it's a great statistic, so I'm going to make it anyway. But, you know, we just went through a drought in 2012. The previous historic drought was 1988. The previous one was 1931. Our average corn yield in 1931 was 25 bushels to the acre. 1988 was 80. In 2012 was 120. Okay, to me that's sustainable. Those were all three historic droughts, and look how much progress we've made in doing better under adverse conditions, and that just shows what the industry is doing. That wasn't all seed technology. That was cultural practices. That was production methods. That was all kinds of innovative things that have been going on.
Rick, does sustainability to the farmer really mean just doing more with less? Does sustainability to the farmer and the food producer mean across the board lower costs?
I'll go out on a limb here, and I have a couple of my board members in the audience. They may correct me later, but to me, I think when a farmer thinks of sustainability in his term, one of the things that he's thinking beyond what society talks about is they have a resource. They have land. They have the ability to produce things, and most of them inherited that from a father or a grandfather, and they have a desire to pass it on to their son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter, and that's sustainability. They want to leave that resource, that soil, that water, what they have, in better shape than what they got it, so it can continue in the family, continue generation to generation, and be better and more productive. So they're really interested in better soils. They're really interested in those things. That's what it means to them.
I'm just concerned that because we have a tendency to I mean, it may cost more money to preserve topsoil. Mm-hmm. It may cost more money to use water more intelligently. It may cost more money to get the seed that is more, that can survive drought or pests in different ways, so that what's sustainable may not immediately translate into lower costs. Or am I wrong about that?
You have to look at the whole equation, and farmers are very astute. They are paying probably five times more for seed corn today than they were 10 years ago, but they're getting a return on that investment, and they're very good at figuring that. Okay, I'll be willing to pay this because I know it's going to pay its way out. So
okay, let me come to you in just a second. Let me, because I know you. All right, go ahead,
Rob. I would be curious. How would Proposition 37 have affected Walmart? How would the legislation that is proposed now in the House to propose labeling on any food item with an ingredient that came from a genetically enhanced crop? You say you'll follow the law.
Yep.
How would that affect your store? My fear as a farm broadcaster and a farmer is that folks like Walmart and the others would be leading a generation to take us back to 40 acres and a mule. So how do we survive this social wave and feed people?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you start having patchwork solutions, you're going to be creating inefficiencies in the system. That's not something that we're interested. As I said before, inefficiencies in the system is not something we're interested in supporting. I'm not too familiar with what's currently in the House, so I'm not sure I can really comment on that right now. But you know, that's sort of our approach on labeling right now. Is in general, better information for the customer is a good thing, but we have to do it in a way that makes sense for the supply chain and works.
Okay. If I got another hand up, otherwise I'm going to come back to you with something else. You talk about patchwork, you talk about different. One of the interesting things in this conversation that we're having is Walmart is national, global, right? So you are trying to achieve efficiencies of scale, massive amounts of supply chain management and movement of goods. Farming at whatever level, whether it's 5,000 acres of soy or, you know, a truck farm someplace, is going to be dependent on regions, states, water conditions, what's allowed in one place by way of pesticides or herbicides versus another. How do you reconcile those two models? And are you talking about that?
I think that goes right back to what we're doing in field to market. We're looking at outcomes, not process. Mm-hmm. And so what works in Virginia may not work in North Dakota, but the outcome can be the same. You can still have a product that's safe and affordable and nutritious, but the way to get there is different.
Yeah.
And so we've reconciled in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, we're not farmers, we're not agronomists, we can't, we don't know what the right decision is, but we trust the American farmer to make those right decisions. They just need to have the right tools and information to be able to do that.
So let me ask you one other thing. There's an 800-pound gorilla that last time I checked isn't here, and his name is Uncle Sam, mm-hmm. right? The government.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say Walmart.
No. I don't know how much that gorilla weighs, but we'll leave that aside. But what role in this conversation is the leadership or lack of leadership, I'm thinking of the Farm Bill, for example, from Washington playing?
I think in the specifics that we're talking about, this context, so far there is, federal government is playing a couple of roles. One is, I'll point out that National Conservation Resource Service of USDA is part of Field to Market, and that's tremendous. I was quite surprised that they joined, but they've been very active in the association or in the group.
Yep.
So far, USDA has been a very strong supporter of, in the federal government, of biotechnology. They've been championing the open and transparent nature of it in our trade agreements overseas, and they've been strongly supportive of that technology. FDA has been strongly supportive. So far, they've been a positive force.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to me that, you know, the way corporate sustainability and corporate responsibility has evolved. And, you know, my background coming from the School of Media Public Affairs at GW, one of the reasons I got into this field is because I got sort of tired of waiting for the federal government to figure it out. We're really excited to figure out supply chain solutions. that can get out in front of whenever they start to get their act together. But if we figure out a way to be able to deliver what society needs, what the environment needs, and what our business supply chain needs, I think, you know, it's going to be a huge success from the government side as well.
I want to take a couple minutes here, and if somebody else, if you are triggered or you have another question, just raise your hand and I'll stop and come to the audience. But in talking about GMO for just a minute, I know that Walmart does a lot of research on its customers and its clients and, mm-hmm. And what appetites, tastes, opinions are all about. What are you learning that we might find very interesting, or what have you learned about how this issue is changing, playing out with customers?
Yeah. It's a difficult one to put your finger on. There are lots of different attitudes that seem to move around a lot, and it sort of depends what part of the country. What I think we've tried to do is say, you know, we, similar to what I was saying earlier, we know that our customers care about sustainability. We know that they want access to information. We also trust that farmers will use the best tools and technology that they have at their disposal to meet the needs of a growing population. That is a positive story. And how do we communicate that story? We try not to get involved in those kinds of debates because it doesn't really bring value to our customers.
But your marketing would reflect what you're learning, right?
You know, Walmart isn't really a marketing-driven organization. We're a product merchandising organization. And the nuance there is that we don't do, if you look at our television ads and our marketing campaigns, there's one message that we deliver. The reason people shop at Walmart is everyday low price. That's the truth. That's what our value is to customers. When they come in that door, we want them to know that the choices that they have at their disposal are the most sustainable choices that we can bring to them. If there is a particular niche product that they feel like they want to choose to purchase, that's their prerogative, and we want to make sure that they have that opportunity. But we don't pick winners or losers. We believe in customer choice.
Mm-hmm. You have any thoughts on this?
I think farmers would feel the same way, that they believe in customer choice, they believe in transparency, and I think that's a great model. Let's put out there and let people choose, but let's make sure they have the right information to make good choices.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I want to ask you this, and speaking directly to the farmers and food producers in the audience, or through the journalists that to the people that the journalists are talking to, if someone is a grower, what advice would Walmart have for them in terms of leveraging their sustainability mm-hmm. to be an attractive supplier to Walmart?
Yep.
Aside from the on-farm benefits, how could these growers turn this into a competitive advantage for themselves?
Yeah. You know, one of the first things I would say is don't take advice from me.
Okay. That's a good disclaimer. We can ignore the rest.
The last thing I want to do is give farmers advice. They should get advice from people who actually know about farming.
Well, now with that out of the way, go ahead.
What I tell all of our suppliers when they ask that kind of question is that this is a leadership opportunity for an industry, for a category, for a particular company. You know, we have we are the largest grocer in America. You know, that's the 800-pound gorilla. We have a corporate commitment around sustainability. Beyond that, it is a key business driver for the future of our business, future of our company. It's up to our suppliers to demonstrate the leadership on how we're going to meet that commitment. It's the same thing in, you know, what's the right product strategy for this category? We rely on our suppliers to do that. So when you take that to sort of the agriculture side, you know, challenge the people who are giving you advice, the people who are actually qualified to give you advice, and say, what is the right way to, we know that this is important, how do we do this more? How do we do this better? How do we do this faster? And then challenge your supply partners. Who are you selling the product to? And, you know, that's obviously, in many cases, a few steps removed from Walmart. But that's why we're here in this forum. That's why we're partnering with groups like Rick's, is to be able to open that communication and say, through the supply chain, here's a way to communicate what we're doing and deliver that message. We've tried to set some sort of, depending on the categories, you know, level setting, mm-hmm. but it's really up to our suppliers to say, we understand what's important, here are the solutions that we're driving, and here's the outcomes that we're all recognizing, both on the business side and the sustainability side.
Rick? I think there's two levels from a farmer perspective. One is we're starting to realize that we can't just say, trust us, that we're doing the right thing, trust us. We have to get engaged and tell the story. There's an old adage overused, but if you're not at the table, you'll be on the table, and that's really true about sustainability. People want to know, so we can't ignore it, and so we need to tell that story. At another level, we heard from Rich Kottmeyer about 2025. I think there's an opportunity in a commodity business to start differentiating yourself, and that's commodities always adjust to take advantage of that in the long run, but in the short run, you can make yourself a little different, and that's where you can get that premium if you're a little bit different than somebody else.
All right, let me close on this last question. We've talked a lot about the customers, and we've talked about the farmers, and we've talked about sustainability. Let's bring into this mix something else that's relatively new, which is the capacity and the speed with which people can interact with one another. So I'm thinking social media here. How has social media and sustainability affected this relationship, or is it affecting this relationship, and larger and more to the point, affecting how each of you are doing your jobs?
I should probably tweet while you're talking. Yeah.
How many followers do you have?
I don't know.
I mean, because you talked about accountability. You talked about transparency. I mean, that is ultimately what this is really all about, because people now, and I can stand in a Walmart and say something really snarky and horrible.
You probably do.
Never. Or I can say something great. And, you know, I can go to my, you know, I can drive by a farm and see something that I may not like or something that I like, and I can say, hey, you know, what's he doing? Or what are they doing, right? So
I don't think so far in our relationship we haven't gotten into social media, but that's something we need to look at and address. From my perspective, the way I do my job, it's a whole new way to leverage. Farmers and those involved in farming are a very small part of the population anymore. We're several generations removed from the farm. So we need to leverage ourselves, and we haven't so far done a great job of that. And we're trying to train our farmers and our farmer leaders to be engaged and use social media to understand what Twitter is and how to use it, because one comment can have the impact of 10,000 comments out there if it's done in the right way. So it's a big part of our organization in the last 2 years, and it'll get bigger in the next 2 years.
Now, I think there's no doubt that digital and mobile is going to be a key part of how people make decisions in the aisle. And when we're talking about how do we have more transparency and better storytelling in the aisle, there's a huge opportunity there. At the same time, I don't think that, you know, we've seen our customers really driving to that in, you know, all the time, and that sort of goes to the, you know, less than 3 or 5 seconds to make a purchasing decision, but the opportunity is really there.
Okay, we're going to wrap. Next step in field to market?
The next step, field to market, is spinning off as an independent organization now, stepping out on its own. It's become a 501?
C3.
Mm-hmm. The new name is Field to Market, the Alliance
for Sustainable
Agriculture. So that's exciting. It's going to be a standalone group.
And what do you expect from it? What do you, you know, in the next year, 18
yeah.
months?
I mentioned this earlier, but our big hope and why we joined the group is that they are at the cusp of moving from just a calculator organization, just what the metrics are, to actually what the solutions are.
And I'll add, since Rob and his group joined, McDonald's just in the last 2 weeks has joined.
Yep.
So we're getting much more representation at the
so you see growth to this?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, Rob and Rick, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.